Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 20th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, mandatory cool is one step closer to becoming law. The House Ag Committee has completed markup of its version of the Farm Bill, and interstate transport of state-inspected meat may be in the works. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll stay with the livestock theme. I'll update you on the latest trends in Illinois, along with a little ag econ study on the value of Roundup Ready to the environment. It all happens on this Friday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILOAG.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILOAG.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
At 2 o'clock straight up Central Time, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the latest cattle on feed report for the month of July. It says on feed as of July 1 at 99%. The average guess, 99.7. Placed in June at 85%. The average guess at 90.3. From the trade and marketed in June at 97%. The average trade estimate at 96.6%. We'll take those numbers up in a moment when we talk with Mike Zuzolo. The settlement prices from Chicago at the Board of Trade like this afternoon in the soft red winter wheat pit and the September futures at 616 and a quarter, settled down 3.75 today. December futures at 633 and a half were down 1.75. September corn futures down 3 cents, 318 and a quarter. December futures at 333 and a half, down 2.75, and the March contract at 348 and 3/4 finished the day 3 cents lower. December futures for next year, $3.86, down 4. August soybean futures, $8.50 and a quarter a bushel, down 5.75. September beans at 859 and a half, down 5.25. And November beans were down 6.75 pennies at $8.75 and a quarter. November at 909 for next year, down 2.5 cents. Bean meal futures, August contract, 225.20, down 2.30. August bean oil at 14 lower at 37.49. From the Mercantile Exchange, August live cattle, $90.82.5, unchanged on the day. The October futures there at 96.60. They were 15 cents higher. August feeder cattle at 115.50, up a nickel, and the September futures were up 20 cents at 116.67.5. August lean hogs today at $73.87.5, 27.5 cents higher. From the outside markets, crude oil trading the August contract at 39 cents lower now, $75.53 a barrel, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 125 points at 13,876 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
And let's talk a little bit about this marketplace. Kind of an ugly week if you look at the numbers from Friday to Friday. We have beans and we have new lead option, but let's deal with just the new crop months at the moment. Beans were down in the November 73.5 cents from week to week. The corn was down 35 cents. Can it recover in time?
Well, probably not a full recovery. I suspect that the trade has no desire to really take us back up to those old highs at this point. I think certainly the retracement levels should be looked at, especially if we stay on the drier side in the periphery of the Corn Belt. When I went up to the board on Wednesday, you know, it really was a strong sense that the traders we talked to and the people on the floor seemed like they really felt like corn had been made because of the Illinois and Iowa crop, and they were kind of discounting and not looking very hard at the eastern Corn Belt problems, the southern Corn Belt problems, nor were they looking at the drier areas of Minnesota. I was personally struck that some of the Minnesota folks came out in the press, like the, some of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association members came out and said, we're definitely lost our top end of the yield, and you know, we could be at 85% of a normal crop if we don't get any more rain for the next couple weeks. And when I went back and looked at the numbers, it did make sense because their topsoil is about 76% short to very short, and they're over 60% silking in Minnesota as of last week versus about 17% on a five-year average. But the trade really doesn't care about that right now. So I think what you have in the trade right now, and your weekly numbers kind of show this, because if you look at wheat, it's kind of a different story, only down a little bit, just a fraction. I think that says to the market we're still focusing on a U.S. supply and demand balance sheet mindset at the Board of Trade right now for the row crops of corn and beans, with weather obviously twirled in there also. But on the wheat, we've moved away from the U.S. because harvest is over and pushed more to the global mindset where things are a lot tighter. And it was interesting, I saw a Newswire comment hit about midday how the French corn prices were making, I think, all-time highs today on their hot and dry weather. So probably just got to wait some time here and just wait till we get closer when we get into the combines, unless those spreads firm up.
You said wheat hadn't moved much, and indeed on the weeklies it had not, up 2.25 in the nearby contract, and that's a new lead September. December futures were down 2 cents in the wheat bench, so not much movement there. I suppose that gives you heart that there will be a comeback, along with the numbers you quoted from France and some other places around the globe.
Yeah, and it was funny because I met a brand new trader at the board. He was right off the corn pit, and one of the guys from EFG introduced him, me and him together. And he was an older fellow, in his, you know, probably early 60s. And I said, "What's your take on this market right now with the carrying charge and the funds? And I mean, do the supply and demand fundamentals and the basis and the spread still pertain?" And he said, I think we saw it last year that the economics of supply and demand still mean a lot, and they obviously carry the majority of the water, and they are the main drivers of this market price and how we find price discovery. And I think that's where we're at in the wheat right now, Todd, is that the wheat corn spread was exciting as all get out this week. It hit up there into that 313 level in September on an intraday basis, and that actually got us within a nickel of its 1974 high that we show of around 318. So the wheat looks like it is doing a good job, and it just makes the corn that much better value for the Europeans. And it was very interesting to see. Everybody talked about Egypt and everybody talked about India and the wheat markets this week, but it was very nice to see Brazil come in and buy on our weekly export sales. That just more or less, you can connect the dots and say, Argentina's out because Brazil will buy from Argentina unless they just simply don't have any. That's a nice way to go into a freshly harvested crop year. So it's kind of a nice thing to have in your back pocket if you're a world corn trader, in our view anyway.
You talked about retracement levels a bit earlier in the corn pit. Do you know what those are, and whether you would, are you going to be a advocate of scale-up selling into those?
Yeah, we will, especially in the beans. I can say right now, when we look at the Dease corn at 330, we're within about 15 cents of our undervalue level price, and we're using about a 1.25 carryover. We're a little bit under USDA by about a bushel and a half on yield, and we're a little bit higher on demand, about 110 million bushels right now. So we're closer to our undervalue in corn. If we're right about a retracement, I don't see any reason why, without a little bit of sideways to higher action in the corn and in the wheat, or, you know, no pressure from those two, why we couldn't get back to that 365 and 370 level like we did, you know, Monday and or last Friday, I guess it was, and try and hit that at least one more time here, given those carryover numbers and our value level analysis. Beans kind of the exact opposite. Our, you know, no beans at 875, still about 25 cents above overvalue levels in our view, using a 250 carryover and anticipating normal growing conditions from here on out.
So you'd be a real willing seller of new crop beans then?
That's exactly right, and that kind of goes against the real short-term mindset in the trade on Wednesday, but you could kind of see that follow through today. They ran it up, and then it was the first thing to really give up when the new weather maps came out. The yield, no question about it, is more of a moving target, and there's still a lot of premium in that bean complex, and even the day traders would admit that on Wednesday when I spoke to them.
I almost hate to put it this way, but not time to get greedy in the bean pit, or time to get greedy in the bean pit, but definitely not time to get greedy in the corn pit. Is that right?
Well, and the key here is something you hear on the radio this year may or may not do what you need it to do. In other words, what I'm getting at is the way the basis is and the way the crop size is all over the country. I mean, I've seen pictures in Ohio now. It is definitely as bad as 88 in certain areas of Ohio. I'm going to tell them, and we're going to recommend to them a lot different strategy than we would somebody sitting in Champaign County. So generally speaking, yes, it's time to start looking for recovery, retracement rallies on the beans to get more sold, because we found the last week of probing our clients that generally speaking, they're not nearly as sold in beans as they are in corn.
Hmm. Anything to add in the grains before we hit the livestock very quickly?
Just watching those outside markets. The dollar did make a brand new low, took out its 2004 low on a spot basis today. That's very important, and that had some repercussions in the stock market. And the dollar in the stock market and the emerging markets still play a very serious role in the price analysis and the forecasting of the medium term. So that's something that's really getting more and more of our attention.
USDA, of course, releasing its cattle on feed report for the month of July at 2 o'clock straight up this afternoon, Central Time. On feed as of July 1 at 99, placed in June at 85, marketed in June at 97. Those all look to be within the realm of what the trade was hoping might be those numbers.
Yeah, good numbers overall, neutral. In fact, the news wires have some folks calling it actually bullish on the marketing's number being on the high side of estimates. So if the cash markets firm up, we could see why the cattle futures would turn a little bit higher numbers on Monday's trade. But cash has always been our king here the last couple of weeks.
And for the livestock producers, do you think is there any time that they ought to be looking to lock in something on the corn side?
Yeah, we do. In fact, USDA came in and they actually increased pork production for both 07 and 08 on this report we got in July. And so it's pretty important at this point, especially for the meal hitting 225 a ton in lead month, and with the corn getting close to, once those spreads get all the way as wide as they possibly can here. In other words, you get a 30-cent spread or 6 cents a month on a carrying charge on a spread in corn, I'd be looking at getting some stuff locked in for that fall time period in case there are some problems. And again, it goes back to that western Ohio area, eastern Indiana area. There's some large poultry producers and feeders over there. They're going to be pulling basis from a long, long range.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. In just a moment, Dave Dickey will be here with all of the day's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, the House Appropriations Committee passed a fiscal year 2008 USDA budget that increases funding for food safety and sets a timetable for mandatory country of origin labeling for red meats, beef, pork, lamb, and goats, beginning September 30th of 2008. Also in the bill, a provision that would prevent USDA from establishing or implementing a rule allowing import of poultry processed or raised in China. Other highlights include an increase of $121.5 million for the FDA to improve food safety and drug regulations, $38 million more for USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service to fill federal meat inspector vacancies, an increase in the Women, Infants, and Children Food Program of almost $416 million, and almost $40 million more for food stamps. The House Agriculture Committee completed markup of the 2007 Farm Bill late last night. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns made a surprise visit yesterday to the House Agriculture Committee room. Johanns sat at a hearing table for about 30 minutes. Among the new amendments passed yesterday, the Future Farmstead Demonstration Project, Georgia Democrat John Barrow.
It authorizes the department to set up and five demonstration projects around the country so we can actually utilize and test and demonstrate in the field the kind of on-farm energy systems that can make it easier for energy-hungry operations to wean themselves off the grid.
And Ohio lawmaker Zach Space successfully lobbied for an amendment that would allow state facilities to inspect meat for interstate shipment.
This proposal will greatly reduce the distance farmers have to travel to bring their products to market, and it will also have a tremendous impact in increasing the markets to which they can sell, as well as bring down costs. It's an unnecessary burden for livestock producers to transport their live cattle great distances to be inspected in a federal facility when inspection facilities meet and sometimes exceed federal standards. If foreign nations can ship their meat across state lines, there's no reason states cannot have the same rights.
Johanns says the USDA will spend the next week to 10 days breaking down the bill passed out of committee until the measure reaches the House floor. A court ruling will allow EPA and livestock producers to continue to work together to improve air quality near livestock operations. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
A federal appeals court has ruled that farms that have entered an agreement with the Environmental Protection Agency to study air emissions cannot be sued over those emissions. American Farm Bureau air quality specialist Allison Specht says the ruling is good news for agriculture and the public.
Air quality research, as far as agriculture, is an up-and-coming discipline. There aren't many people out there studying it. So as the data progresses, we will better know what we emit and then be able to base sound techniques and agricultural practices based from that data.
A group called the Association of Irritated residents filed the lawsuit saying the EPA did not follow proper procedures. The court disagreed.
This is the first time that EPA has entered into an agreement like this with the agricultural industry, and we believe that this is a positive step, that EPA is listening to some of our concerns now, better equipping themselves to make good decisions.
Specht says the program allows farmers and the EPA to work together to improve air quality.
We feel that any EPA rules should be based on sound science. We don't know what the emissions are going to be. We don't know whether we'll now be under new Clean Air Act requirements or not. But we feel that it's good for our industry to have the data, so therefore we can take the right steps down the road to reduce emissions.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can find Commodity Week there by about 6 o'clock this evening if you can't wait to hear it on the air at 11:30 Central Time tomorrow. Up next, did you know Clinton and Greene counties lead Illinois in livestock numbers? Illinois Livestock Production Facts. Southwestern Illinois is home to the state's two leading livestock counties, Clinton and Greene, that according to a recent University of Illinois study. Clinton County is tops in total output, and Greene is first in terms of the industry share of personal income. The study is based on 2004 data, that's the latest year available, and indicates there were 40,070 livestock farms in the state that year. 15,000 were cow-calf operations, 5,000 fed cattle, 1,500 dairy cattle, 3,400 hog operations, 1,900 sheep, 1,344 goat, and 2,417 poultry facilities. There were also 7 mink enterprises and 64 aquaculture operations, along with 8,980 horse farms. In terms of output, Clinton County livestock producers ranked first, followed by fellow producers in Stevenson, DeKalb, Henry, Adams, Joe Davies, Washington, Effingham, Lawrence, and Knox counties. But when ranked by relative economic significance in the county, Greene led the way, followed by Jasper, Washington, Lawrence, Pike, Clinton, Carroll, Stark, Schuyler, and Richland. Well, GMO seeds benefit the environment. Genetically modified seeds that are resistant to a low-toxicity herbicide, glyphosate, have a positive environmental impact when compared to the other technologies to combat weeds, that according to a University of Illinois study. With the emergence of glyphosate-resistant weeds, the environmental consequences of alternatives to the use of genetically modified seed are of increasing importance, explains Jerry Nelson. He's a professor in the U of I Department of Agricultural and Consumer Sciences. Nelson and his doctoral student, Justin G. Gardner, conducted a study that simulated the environmental effect of abandoning the glyphosate-resistant seed if weeds develop immunity to it. In short, the study shows it is almost always better for the environment under conventional tillage systems as it concerns herbicides if glyphosate-resistant seeds are used as directed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's Friday afternoon, July the 20th, 2007. Time now to take a look at the cash grain market. Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us, where he is the general manager. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Cash corn below $3.
It's been a while, but we broke below $3 yesterday. There were no parties.
I'm sure there weren't any parties. Were there any calls is the question.
There were a few calls, but I don't think I can necessarily repeat what was said.
It has broken back.
I guess, you know, if we look at the glass half full side of this, is that I think we probably have in excess of a 30-35% of the new crop that I would expect to buy on the books already. So we've got a good chunk of our new crop handle already sold by the producer at substantially better basis, or substantially better basis and flat price levels.
Are your expectations for basis to widen or narrow next week?
I think we can go ahead and see them widen a little bit further. The transportation system is just really shook on if we can get this crop put away or not. Now, if we can go in and start trade some hot, dry weather in that, South Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota corner again, or in Ohio again, the board rallies a little bit, maybe we'll have enough concern that we could free stuff up a little bit or stabilize it. I think basically the market wants us to prove that we can put this crop away before we're going to see any type of a big recovery.
And that happened, of course, last year.
Exactly.
Where after harvest, we got the recovery, and we got a pretty good recovery. Most people thought it would come in the springtime, and we got one of those too, but we got one early on. Your expectations for something similar this year?
I think it's entirely possible. The market's going to build in freight at a big premium to move things. We're going to force us to see if we can put it away and put everything away that we can. But then you get the old scenario of once it gets put away, the bin door gets locked, and it is going to take enough of a move to encourage somebody to want to sell it after it's put away. And that can take a little bit. 5-10 cents doesn't do it.
Yeah, that's for corn. What about beans at this time? Can you get a handle on that market?
Beans are just, we've got this huge swing between a big carryover of old crop beans and cutting it in half or less for the new crop and getting into kind of a snug scenario a year from now. So that makes for a big carry. Some spec buying in the board, and you look at the fund buying, they have added to their long through the course of this month. So we've got prices that have come down a lot, but there's still fund and spec buying in this thing, and the cash market is less willing to chase it than they are.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 290 on nearby corn in Paxton, 291 for new crop. Beans, 779 for July, and 802 for new crop.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
As Bruce Bostert, he's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Friday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois legislative leaders and Governor Rob Blagojevich met today to discuss the budget, but didn't come to a deal. Lawmakers discussed the state's capital improvement needs, but not how to get the money to pay for them. The House and Senate have conducted Saturday and Sunday sessions the past 2 weekends, but they adjourned until Monday this weekend. Blagojevich and Senate President Emil Jones, both Democrats, have squabbled with Republicans and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan over the multi-billion-dollar spending plan. Top Democratic legislative leaders, meanwhile, are planning to tout the benefits of a new electric rate relief package in a statewide fly-around. An announcement today from Michael Madigan's office says the speaker will join Emil Jones and Attorney General Lisa Madigan on tour stops Monday that include Decatur. The deal apparently would provide about $1 billion in relief over 4 years to customers hit by sharp increases this year. The location of Champaign's fire stations will be the subject of public meetings next week. The fire department's working on a master plan to give to the city council next month. Fire Chief David Pennacook says the plan may look for a new station somewhere north of I-74 to address growth on the city's north and west sides. It may also call for one or more station closings. It may cost more soon for regular riders to ride Champaign-Urbana MTD buses. The Mass Transit Board is set to vote next week on a plan to raise the price of annual passes, to $235 from $200. The hike would also affect tokens and passes for high school and younger students. Regular fares would remain the same. Congressman Phil Hare says he plans to run for re-election next year. The first-term Rock Island Democrat made a stop in Galesburg to officially announce his intent for a second term. Hare beat Republican Andrea Zingel last November. He says he loves his job, but he adds he wishes Illinois hadn't moved up its primary because it makes it seem like candidates must start campaigning for re-election as soon as they're sworn into office. A Champaign-based bank will expand as two of the biggest banks in the region get set to merge. Freestar Bank says it's reached a deal with Main Street Bank and Trust to acquire 5 Main Street branches in Champaign and Urbana. The change will satisfy a requirement that Main Street sell off some branches before it merges with First Busey Corporation at the end of the month. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On this Friday afternoon, Mike Pilecki joins us from the Illinois State Water Survey to take a look at what's been happening in the world of Midwestern agriculture. Thanks for filling in this afternoon, Mike. We appreciate it a lot.
You're welcome.
What's your title there?
I'm the regional climatologist for the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Okay, you should have a good handle on what's been happening then here in the Midwest, and maybe you can tell me how that compares to normal.
Well, we just had a wonderful week here for precipitation in eastern Iowa and northern and central Illinois and a little bit into the drier areas of the Ohio River Valley. But we're still having some dryness problems both out on the western end of the Corn Belt and on the eastern side in the Ohio River Valley.
And then what are our expectations as we go into the weekend and for the coming week?
Well, besides the fact that it's going to be a lovely weekend for people, unfortunately, the forecast is looking very dry for the next 2 weeks or so in the western and central Corn Belt. We may eke out a near normal amount here and point southward and to the southeast of us, but to the north and west of us, it looks like it's going to be well below normal in precipitation for the next 2 weeks.
And also,
it looks like it's going to be warmer than normal, getting up into the 90s by the middle of next week.
There were some calls for that hot, very dry weather to ensue last week, actually, and then that, of course, turned into rainfall. What's the likelihood that this might turn around? Is it set up differently such that you're really confident that that's the way things will run?
It looks like it's more likely not to break down like it did this past week, and it's definitely the models are certainly locked in on this solution, and looks like it's probably going to remain dry.
Have you had a chance to take a look and see what the Midwestern Regional Climate Center numbers and yields look like for corn and soybeans across the Midwest? They update, I think, just about every week during the growing season.
Yeah, we update them on Mondays, and right now we're calling for an average of about 150 bushels for the whole Corn Belt area, which is about 101% of the 5-year average. And so we do have some pretty good news there. With regards to the soybeans, I have to change my page here.
That's okay.
And we're a little bit above average for comparing to the last 5-year average in that case also.
All right. We appreciate it, Mike, and thanks for filling in this afternoon.
All right. You're welcome.
Mike Bilecki is with the Illinois State Water Survey and the Midwestern Regional Climate Center joining us this afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture weather across the Midwest. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in the markets. If you can't wait, you can always visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can pick up that program after just about 6 o'clock Central Time on this Friday evening. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.